Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NFL Alumni Lounge. I'm your host, Charlie Boots, and this week we are proudly bringing you this episode from the Hall of Immortality in Canton, Ohio. We have President and CEO of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Mr. David Baker, stepping into the NFL Alumni Lounge. I can't tell you how excited I am to bring you this episode. You know, David Baker has done so much for our Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's raised the status of it. He's raised the experience of it. And the team up there, our friends in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, is an incredible, incredible staff up there. Love working with the whole team up there. So howdy do to all our friends in Canton and to all the listeners tuning in. It is nice to see you back in the lounge. This episode is being brought to you by our friends at Shure Audio. Shure microphones, which is what we're recording on right here in the lounge. Only the best for the NFL alumni, and only the best come from our friends at Shure. So if you're looking to take your sound up to the moon, I would highly suggest getting behind Shure microphone. I'm currently broadcasting on a Shure SM7B, and we couldn't be happier with it. Thank you so much to our friends at Shure for always supporting us and making sure that we've got the best gear, whether we're in the studio, on the road. You guys know how much this show travels, so it means the world to us to be able to offer the top quality to our listeners. Now, before we get into this one, don't forget, guys, for all updates on anything NFL alumni, log on to NFLalumni.org. And be sure to follow us on all social medias at NFL Alumni. And you can follow our friends at the Pro Football Hall of Fame on Twitter and Instagram at Pro Football HOF. That's Pro Football HOF. Now, let's bring the big man on into the lounge. Here he is, folks, President and CEO of our proud Pro Football Hall of Fame, Mr. David Baker. David, how are you?
Charlie, I'm excited to be with you and appreciate all you do for the game and for the guys who built the game. It's great to be with you, and it's great to be with them.
Absolutely. And for the first time, folks, in the alumni lounge here, we just had the mixing board jam up. And David, I got to think it might be some of those ghosts and spirits you're hanging out with over there at the hall.
You know what? John Madden has the classic line that he's convinced that when the last fan is left and the janitor has swept the floor and turns out the lights, that all these bronze busts talk to each other. And I've been here late at night and tried to check it out. But now, actually, through some technology, we can make them talk. You know, we'd like to think that we have the spirit over here of every guy who played the game. Absolutely. Not just the 326 bronze busts that we have, but that every guy who played the game, even for a week, has an archive here. And we can pull that archive. And it has not just his, you know, stats and other things in it, but he can add to that archive not just the football player he was, but the man he is. So that generations to come, they will know all about Charlie Boots. We do like to think that we're taking care of a lot of legacies over here.
The whole NFL family and the whole NFL alumni here has an immense appreciation for what you've done. Since you've taken control of the Hall of Fame, it has grown worldwide and in Canton. And I just want to thank you for what you've done for the game. And I hope you realize how much of an impact you've had.
Well, I appreciate that, Charlie. It means a lot to me coming from a man like you and those who built this game. I think what you guys have done is something really special. Abraham Lincoln once said that a nation that does not honor its heroes shall not long endure. And I know you guys aren't going into battle like the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, but I think that you are on such a big stage that has become, this sport has become our passion for America and part of the fabric of our country, that, you know, people do see in every game, they see commitment and they see courage and they see sometimes a fall from grace, and then they see redemption and resurrection. And these are values that, yes, they will probably make you a great football player. They may even get you a bronze bust here in Canton, Ohio. But they're also values that can make you a better dad or better mom or a greater cellist in the symphony. And they could certainly, I really believe that you guys who played were so far ahead of the curve. When you huddle up, you understand the meaning of team. Nobody's asking each other, hey, are you a Republican or a Democrat?
Right.
You know, and you were way ahead of the game on race. You know, the only color that mattered was your jersey.
Absolutely.
And I think there's so much that you guys epitomize and do that it's, you know, for me, understand that it's not about the worship of the football hero. It's really about the values that you guys relied upon over a long period of time to drag a lot of other people to greatness. And so, you know, my mom and dad couldn't read or write. And if it wasn't for sports, my life would be very, very different. And I learned a lot about perseverance from coaches and teammates out there. So we are deeply grateful to every guy who built this league.
And that is so true when you say color does not matter. Political beliefs do not matter when we're talking what you've put out on the gridiron. And how perfect is it when you walk into that Hall of Fame, a statue of Jim Thorpe is there, a man that totally symbolizes that.
First president of the what was to become the National Football League was a Native American. 2 years later, you had Fritz Pollard as an African-American head coach, one of our Hall of Famers. And it was a situation, you know, where, I mean, that's, what is that, 25 years before Jackie Robinson stepped on a field. But the game itself is such a wonderful metaphor for life. Bill Curry has a wonderful saying. He said that it's the only sport where every player needs every teammate on every play just to survive. And so there's so many lessons. I truly believe that sometimes, especially as the game has become, you know, much more successful and there's so much money out there, you know, sometimes people think of it as entertainment, and it is great entertainment. But I'll tell you, the guys who I've met, the guys who I get to serve as Hall of Famers, I have found that they have a doctorate in commitment and perseverance and a whole lot of other life lessons that are really, really important. And so to us, if we can shine that light on you, you can shine the light on those values, and we're going to have better soldiers and firemen and police officers. And like I said, mothers, I think it's already made our country a better place. And again, I think it's, you know, I'm privileged to spend most of my days hanging with people like you.
Man, we're privileged to have you here, first of all. And now you got to take us into this, right? Just as a businessman, you had experience as a mayor of Irvine. Then you were a commissioner of the Arena Football League 11 and a half years. So you take the job in Canton as CEO and president. You walk in. What's in your mind, like the way you've expanded this thing, was that there from the start, or how did the vision come about?
Well, I'll tell you, let me tell you how I got here, Charlie, because it's pretty interesting. I had left the Arena Football League. I was the managing partner of a $1.3 billion project in Henderson, Nevada. And I got a call from a friend named Jed Hughes, who heads up the sports division at Corn Ferry, and he said, hey, would you be interested in taking the position at the Hall of Fame? And I knew my predecessor, and I loved the Hall. And I said, you know, that's really great, but I kind of gave him my best Will Ferrell imitation and told him I was a big deal on this big project and couldn't do it. And he sent me the job description. And later on that night, I'm going through my emails, cleaning stuff up, and I sent it to my wife, and I said, hey, you'll never guess what happened today. And she called me 15 minutes later, and she said, hey, we're going to go do this. And I wasn't intentionally condescending, but I said, hey, sweetheart, I already told them no. And she said, well, you can call them back. And I said, well, sweetheart, we got this big project. And she said, yeah, but you got partners. They can take it over now. And I said, sweetheart, I don't know if you know this, but we're from Newport Beach, California. It's cold in Ohio. You've never been as cold as it is in Ohio. And she said, I can handle that. I said, why do you want to do this so bad? And she said something very profound there, Charlie. She said, have you read this thing? And I hadn't even read it when I sent it to her. She said, you need to read this because this is what you believe. And for me, the Hall of Fame, there's never been a great player on any level that didn't have commitment. that didn't make somebody else better and sacrifice for them. And I just think there's so many wonderful lessons here that we get to shine a light on. And there's so many wonderful stories. I mean, this league is made up of incredible stories. And some of them are guys who made the top 100 players of the first century, and some of them are made up of guys who played a week or two. But they're incredible stories, and they're stories from which we could all learn. And that's why we have the Black College Football Hall of Fame here, is because those are interesting stories. And so it's been my treat to be here. And as we've come here, I think we just get excited about what we're doing. And that's led to this dream of a village around us that can help football fans understand 365 days a year, not only what it's like to be at a game, but maybe even to be in a game. And, you know, with the centennial coming up, we have a 2-acre park that we have raised $12 million from private citizens and from the city and the state. And the NFL hasn't participated in this. This is just the good people of Ohio. And we will dedicate that park on the 100th birthday of the NFL, which will be September 17th, 2020. And Charlie, I would love to have you and as many of your listeners who built this league to be there at that time, because we're going to dedicate a park. And in that park, there's going to be 10 different pillars, one for each decade. And on those pillars will be the name of every player who ever played in the NFL in its first century who built this game. And it'll be our thank you to you so that your grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren can go down there and say, hey, here's great, great, great grandfather, you know, who helped build the NFL. And, but, you know, the Hall of Fame is not only the hall for those 326 guys who have their bronze bust here, but it's for all of you guys who built this great game.
And attention to detail is something that is so clear about you, and it's so part of your legacy. Where did that attention to detail come from?
You know what? There is a lawyer deep inside me, and I've tried everything I could to get rid of it. But again, I think that's also, again, one of the things that sports teaches you. You know, my son was fortunate enough to play for the Falcons for 7 years.
First round pick, folks.
Yeah, let me tell you, he understood detail, you know, in those offensive, you know, line rooms, you know, where they were going over, you know, schemes and programs. And you know, that's what you guys do. And so for me, for us, you know, I'd like to think we have attention to detail. I'd like to think we have some vision. But mostly, I hope, you know, we care. That if the Pro Football Hall of Fame doesn't care about the game and those guys who played it, nobody will.
Yeah, well, you clearly care, and it's so cool. I don't know how many of the listeners realize that what you've turned the Hall of Fame into, the Village and Johnson Controls Stadium into, is, well, Tom Benson Stadium, is a 365. You have the Black College Championships coming up there, right? The Canton Bulldogs play there. There's so much football that happens there year round.
Well, we also have what will ultimately be 11 youth fields. You know, so we had about 200,000 kids in here this last year, 80% of whom are from outside the state of Ohio. And ultimately we think we can get about 500,000 there. But you know, for us, you know, it is all about, you know, we like to think that this is going to be a Disneyland for football. And if Walt Disney had the happiest place on earth, we think we've got the most inspiring place on earth, because we can tell story after story after story, you know, and respectfully, you know, when we've got their bronze bust out here, most fans think you fell out of bed great. But in reality, once you start talking to guys, you know that not one of them did. They had to fight for excellence. And again, that's something from which we can all learn. If we can learn how to huddle up in America, if we can learn how to fight for excellence, if we can learn how to sacrifice for each other, this is going to be a better place.
Absolutely. And I mean, I was actually about to say, I was going to make that comparison to Disney World, because you have really embraced the Hall of Fame and turned it into the Disney World of football. Was that at all, like, when you started laying out the blueprints and your vision, was that one of your inspirations? Where were you pulling inspiration from?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, Charlie, I have always been a big fan of Walt Disney. And I grew up about 10 miles from Disneyland, and back when it was an orange grove. And then they built Disney World in a swamp. And, you know, it occurred to me one day that he did it on the backs of a cartoon mouse, for goodness sakes. You know, he did not have Joe Namath or Joe Montana or Jerry Rice. You know, he didn't have all these stories of James Harris or Doug Williams that come out of the Black College Football Hall of Fame. And again, you know, I think you saw it a week ago when we were sharing the news of who's in the centennial class, and, you know, walked onto the sets at CBS and Fox with Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson. You know, a carrier pigeon could do my job. All I got to do is thank them for all they've done for the game, tell them that they're coming to Canton, Ohio, and that we're going to keep their legacy forever. And then when you step aside, the emotions well up, and I've knocked on the door enough to know that for every guy, it was a battle to get there. It was a battle to stay there. It was, you know, they're thinking about the mother that drove them to practice when they were 10, and the dad who wouldn't let them quit, or the coach that inspired them, or the teammate that made them better. And these are wonderful stories, and it's a great game. And you guys, there's so much more to learn from you guys than just football.
DB, a carrier pigeon could not do your job. First of all, it'd be a huge pigeon, and second of all, it could not bring in over $1 billion. David Baker has brought in, folks, over $1 billion into our Hall of Fame. And DB, you're a humble man, but that deserves praise, and what you've done up there deserves extreme praise. Has there been a moment between the knocks and going on set and telling guys they're going to be coming to Canton? Has there been one that tops the list for you?
Oh, you know, Charlie, people often ask me that, and I'll tell you, it's kind of like asking which one of my kids I love most. I kind of love the one I'm with. My first time I did this, we didn't have, you know, where we kind of got an understanding of this was my first year here. I'd only been here 2 months, and we were going to put guys on the honor show, and that's how we were going to announce who they were. And so we didn't have enough time to knock on their door, so we called them. And I called Michael Strahan, because he was on the other side of town and had to get to Radio City Music Hall. Then I called Derek Brooks, because he was kind of my I knew Derek as a friend from the Arena League, so I just wanted to call a buddy and give him some great news. And then the third one was Ray Guy, you know, who'd been a punter for eligible 29 years and hadn't made it. And I called Ray, and he almost didn't answer because my phone is area code 714. And Ray's got that slow Southern Mississippi drawl. And I said, Ray, this is Dave Baker. I'm new at the hall. And he said, yes, sir. And I said, Ray, it's my great pleasure. And I could hear him fall to the floor and his phone rattle around and his wife go, honey, are you okay? And I thought I'd killed my first Hall of Famer. he was probably down for about 2 minutes, which is a long time when you're trying to get somebody over to a TV set. And he got up and he said, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood until now how much this meant to me. And so then we kind of started on this journey of how do we show this to fans? And it was the knock on the door. And last, when we opened up the envelope and found out who the guys were who were selected as the coaches, it's always a surprise to me. But we found, you know, we discovered within about 10 minutes that one was going to be on TV in New York on Saturday, and the other one was going to be in LA on Sunday. And we put together some plane flights and said, we could do this. And I was really glad. Not because it's certainly not about me being on TV, but that people, you know, Bill Cowher is a private man, and all he wants to show is that determination and that jaw on that sideline. But boy, when you could see him with his family, you understood how important this journey is. And then for Jimmy Johnson, you know, I wasn't sure he was ever going to breathe again after I told him. He was just, but you know,
that was beautiful.
But I've seen it over and over again. When you get to knock on the door for a Jerry Kramer, waited 45 years. Kurt Warner meant a lot to me because he'd been in the Arena Football League and I was a commissioner. But even Brett Favre, you know, on the day I knocked on the door for Brett Favre, it took 10 seconds to select him. You know, I knew I was going to knock on his door. He knew I was going to knock on his door before we ever started. But when I told him, he was, I think at that time, one of the 302 best players, coaches, and contributors of all time in the game. I would say the word that comes to mind was humility. He knew the shoulders that he stood upon. And I would say the commonality in everybody I've knocked on the door is humility. At that moment, it's not just about them, but it's about all the people that helped them get there.
Isn't that true? When you find greatness, humble usually goes hand in hand, folks. Now, when you were growing up as a kid, I know you were a big-time basketball player. I know you loved the game of football. Who were your favorite athletes growing up?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I would say when I was a young kid, and I was one of those kids who was, you know, they weighed you to play football in my area. And when I was eight, they wanted me to play with 15-year-olds. And so it didn't kind of work out. But we corrected it in the next generation with both my boys. And I would say of all the games, I love football the most. But I kind of ended up being a basketball player, and it got me to college, and it got me to law school, and a little bit around the world. But Elgin Baylor was always one of my guys. I used to call myself Elgin Baker. I've always just had, you know, Bart Starr was one of those guys for me. And you know, Charlie, one of the more somber responsibilities I have here is to go and honor these guys when they're laid to rest. And we have a medallion that we generally present to the family or to the widow. And so you get your bronze bust, you get your gold jacket, you get your Hall of Fame Ring of Excellence. But then there's a medallion that says, and many put it on their tombstone, that says Pro Football Hall of Fame, Canton, Ohio, forever. So, you know, I have had the privilege of not only being at a number of ceremonies, but being one of the officiants to speak at them. And to speak at Bart Starr's funeral, again, what you find out about most of these guys is they're really good men. This game, these values, it's, you know, and when you're in trouble in life, you don't go back to your calculus teacher, you don't go back to your chemistry teacher, but most of us go back to a coach or a teammate. And, because they taught us how to get up when we got knocked down and keep going when we couldn't keep going any longer.
When you look at that in your life, who was your biggest coach, motivator through life? Was it your parents? Was it a coach? Who's that special person for you?
Oh, I would definitely say it was my high school coach and my college coach. But my first one was probably my high school coach. And this guy, his name was Jay Young, and he was a coach that, taught driver's ed. And he would send letters to his players. And even when I was in junior high, I got a letter from this guy. And every once in a while, just the fact that he knew my name I'll tell you, I learned a lot from that coach. My college coach was the same way. There have been some youth coaches that he had a huge influence on my life. Again, my dad was a hardworking guy, worked in a lumber mill, couldn't read or write, didn't have the sophistication or the experience from his own family to be able to say, hey, I love you, son. You know, he did, by the way, he really did, but it's not where he came from. And I learned from a lot of coaches what it's like to be a part of something special. And when you become part of a team, you learn that when you give yourself to something that's bigger than you, you actually become more relevant, not less. And that became a driving force in my life, really because of a lot of coaches, my high school coach, my college coach, a guy named Tim Tift, I have always loved this concept of team, where the more you give, the farther you go. And again, I think all of you guys are experts on that. You have a doctorate in something that the rest of us need to understand.
And you get it, man. And, you know, the coolest thing about you is that you really do care. And in all your actions, you can tell that, you know, you're an extremely great businessman. You're a showman. You get all the aspects, but at the bottom of it all, you really care. And that's really cool to all of us. What I wanted to ask you is every year, the guys that get in, you know, it solidifies their immortality. This year, I know the senior class, we had more members because of the 2020 centennial. The Raiders fans, I've been getting a lot of letters from. They're heartbroken that Cliff Branch and Tom Flores didn't get in this year. How do you look at the process, and what do you say to fans of guys who haven't yet made it?
Well, I would say that, first and foremost, I'm a fan, too. And I will tell you, I don't have a vote. I sit in the meeting, and I run the meeting. And we got to get done on time, but it's a year-long process. You know, guys, our selectors work forever on this, and people would be blown away by how much money, or excuse me, not money, but how much time they spend on this, and how much they care. You know, but I'll tell you, it should be hard to get in the Hall of Fame. It shouldn't be easy. It should be controversial. And when I opened up the envelope, which, you know, Ernst & Young gives to us, because I don't calculate the votes. They do that themselves. I'm always surprised. You know, it's hard to get into the Hall of Fame. But I will tell you, just to be a finalist is incredible. And I think Cliff Branch and I think Tom Flores, you know, make it at some point. They should. I was one of those guys. I thought that they'd be on it. But I'll tell you, the Blue Ribbon Committee that worked on this was incredible, Charlie. They spent hours and hours themselves. There was a subcommittee that spent a bunch of time reviewing video and tape. And then we had probably about 8 hours worth of phone calls over 5 conference calls to reduce 300 down to these 35 that were being considered, 38, I guess. And then the day we did this, it was a 13-hour day, and we not only had we had a majority of our selectors, 13 of them, who are prominent media elite. Then we had 7 football professionals: Dick LeBeau, Bill Belichick, Ron Wolf, Bill Polian, John Madden, Gil Brandt, Ozzie Newsome, and then we had about 5 historians. And everybody gave a different perspective to it, and it was spectacular. And I think the greatest compliment we can give for the process is that you had guys, including Coach Belichick, who said, hey, being here in this building, selecting this class to make history is one of the highlights of my professional career. And there were a lot of guys who said that, including Coach Belichick. I mean, how serious he is, how serious they are about the history and the legacy of the game. It is going to be controversial. It's going to be hard, and but it is special.
Man, that would be some staff with those guys you just mentioned in one war room. Forget it, folks. Yeah. Now, Since you've assumed office in 2014, it has been a treat for everyone to see how you've expanded and what you've done at the Hall. How are you looking now at stepping into the next 100 years? Do you have any major goals you could share with us, and how are you looking at it?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Number one is the centennial. We really want that to be a special time that kind of punctuates this 100th season that we've just gone through, but you always celebrate your birthday at the end of that year. And September 17th to the 18th, we'd love to invite as many of your listeners and alumni who can get to Canton for some what we think is going to be the greatest reunion in sports. You know, and you guys love being around the locker room and love seeing each other. We want this to be 2 days of something special. And we're going to have some special entertainers. We're going to enshrine our seniors and other in the centennial class. But it's going to be a special celebration as we dedicate Centennial Plaza and all those names that are going to be in it. But I also think we're looking forward to starting the village, or, you know, kind of finishing the village and continuing that process. And if we're lucky, we're never going to stop construction on it. It's going to keep growing and growing and growing. We're looking at Hall of Fame Health, which is, you know, a great deal of the innovations in modern medicine have come either from battlefields or playing fields in terms of performance. So how can we take the very best health to take care of those who played the game and also to prepare those who are going to play it in the future? So we're looking at a benefits package and other stuff that we could do to help guys. You know, Bart Oates has been a great teammate for us with the NFL alumni there. And we really want this to be a place where it's not just for those 326 guys who have bronze busts here, but it's for everybody that played the game and everybody that loves the game.
Absolutely. And folks, wait till you see some of the blueprints. When you see that hotel, when you see that village, it is just mind blowing. And we know you got to go, Prez. We got to get down here to Miami. But I gotta leave them with this. If there's someone listening that has not yet had the pleasure of visiting the Hall of Fame, what do you tell them?
Well, we'll tell them that we're open here 364 days a year. Give me a call, especially if they played the game. We would love to pull their archive so that we can see how we're preserving their history here, too. But we do think it's the most inspiring place on earth. When I came here, Charlie, I must confess, even, you know, despite my statement to my wife, I didn't know how cold it was going to be. But the other thing that surprised me was I didn't know how many people come here who are terminally ill, and for whatever reason, they want to come see the Pro Football Hall of Fame before they die. It's a big bucket list item for people, and we try to take good care of them. But I think as we've gone through a number of these, we've learned that for a lot of people, they don't watch this game in the stadium. They watch it at home on TV with their family. And they've seen Roger Staubach or Aaron Rodgers throw a Hail Mary and miracles happened. And they know there's always hope. So we'd love to have anybody who played this game come back as our guest. You will always have a home. But we think this is your second home. And we're going to keep your legacy alive forever.
Jeez. David, thank you so much. And guys, you know, sometimes stars just align and the right person is in the right role at the right time. And that's you, Mr. Baker. You've taken the job. We're so thankful you took it because you're guiding this ship in the right direction, and we all thank you for it.
Charlie, that's very gracious of you, but I got a great staff and a great team behind me, and they all believe in you guys. So appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you in Miami.
Absolutely. Let's get the Super Bowl kicked off, baby.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Charlie.
And that will do it from beautiful Canton, Ohio, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. A very special thank you to President David Baker and the whole staff up there at the Hall. We will be seeing you very soon for induction weekend and the centennial celebration. Any NFL alumni members looking to attend the biggest reunion in sports at the centennial celebration, you can find all the information on ProFootballHallOfFame.com and NFLAlumni.org. Special thank you to our friends at Shure Audio for having us hooked up with the best audio in the game. Remember, if you're going to do it right, be a Shure shot. Get behind a Shure microphone and do it like the alumni. Come on, I wouldn't steer you wrong. This is Hall of Fame audio, baby. And it's a Hall of Fame party every time you guys come around. Thank you so much for the support you've been giving the NFL Alumni Lounge. And please continue to share and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all of your favorite podcast streaming platforms. I'd like to also send a big thank you to our friends, and I should say teammates, at Scholastic Books and the University of Chicago's my very own library, because we've been able to, with all this craziness going on with the coronavirus, we've been able to put together some read-aloud videos with some NFL stars, guys like Rashad Jennings, Matthew Cherry, and the list goes on, CEO Beasley Reese. I mean, guys have really been stepping up and putting our mission of caring for kids first, and it's been tremendous to see these videos broadcast into classrooms across America and do the bit that, well, not classrooms, at-home classrooms, I guess you'd say, because all the schools are out. And it just means a lot to us to be associated with these companies and to be able to help and do our small part here for the greater good. It's really inspiring to see the whole country and the sports community coming together, everybody working as a team, as we always should be. So let's continue to keep our thoughts positive, moving forward as a team, trying to get to the highest level that we can together. As for me, I'll be seeing you next week, same place, same time, right here at the lounge. See you then. Cheers.